Hi, Charlotte.
Hello, Kevin. How are you?
Doing well. How are you?
Great, thank you.
Excuse me. So, great. Hey, I appreciate you taking the time to do this.
Absolutely.
All right, well, if you're ready, let's just get started.
Okay, sounds great.
All right, great. Let's start with your year of graduation from Berkeley and your major.
So, I graduated in 2005. Mm-hmm. And I studied music business management as well as production engineering.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Do you recall which track you were in music business?
It was
like entrepreneurial and management.
Yeah, it was the management one.
Cool.
Yeah.
And what was your primary instrument? Principal instrument.
I was a vibraphone player.
Vibraphone?
Yeah.
I think you're the first vibraphone player I've chatted with.
Possible. It's entirely possible.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Okay, so we'll get to your path later. But
okay.
For now, tell us about your current job. What do you do?
Okay. So I work for a visual effects company, and my job is essentially trying to bring in work to keep all of our artists busy. So we have three locations. London is our head office. Vancouver is like a sister office, if you will, which is where I am. And then we also have a facility which is in Mumbai, India.
And that's Vancouver, Canada.
That's right, yeah. And so across the three facilities, we have nearly 2,000 people.
Wow.
Most of which are artists of some, you know, some type of artist.
What's the company name, by the way?
It's called Double Negative.
Okay.
And so basically what I do in my job is I bid on work to try and keep all of those people busy. usually
on the company's behalf, you're submitting the bids.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
So to, I assume, advertising agencies, movie studios, television?
It's primarily film work. Yeah, I would say 99%. We have a TV division. They do their own bidding and things like that. So I'm primarily just doing feature film work. And generally what happens is the film studios, you know, who, you know, we have relationships with over many years and things like that, will contact us and say, okay, here's the next project. You know, here's a script. And we want you to bid on the visual effects work. And then, you know, that could be minimal or it could be massive. And so we, you know, to go through the script and decide what's needed, and we kind of discuss with our visual effects supervisors and things like that to discuss what kind of work would be needed and ultimately what it's going to cost. And then all of that negotiation back and forth and all that fun stuff that goes along with it as well, and hopefully we get the work.
I imagine that there has to be a lot of back and forth with the studios because
there's
got to be different permutations of, well, hey, if you want to do this close-up, it's this. If you want to see all 80 starships, it's going to be something else.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, and, you know, this can take place over years. a lot of times we'll get contacted from studios, and the film's not even greenlit yet, so we're doing very preliminary estimating. And then, you know, the script changes many, many times. The director can change. You know, the cast changes. So every time that happens, it's another bid pass. So, yes, it can go on for a long time.
Wow. Can I ask about your pay structure? Like, are you salaried? Or are you paid on commission?
I'm salaried.
Okay.
Yeah.
And
so
I
generally do 40 hours, generally.
You said you rarely?
No, I generally do.
Generally do the 40-hour work week, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Cool. And by the way, you say visual effects. Are these all done on computers these days? Are you guys still using?
Yep. Yep. All computers. Yep. That's right.
And just curious, out of 2,000 people working there, how many people would you say are doing your type of job?
Oh, so it's only me in Vancouver. And then there's one person who it's her, she's dedicated job as well in London. The two of us primarily do all of it, but depending on how busy we are and things like that, there may be other producers that can, you know, help out, just depending on how much we have going on.
I can't help but think that you have a lot of responsibility in the sense that you have the ability to get your company in deep, deep trouble if you mess up.
Well, luckily. Right.
If you're like, we totally got this for $100,000, and then
it costs $1 million? Yeah. No. I mean, obviously, everything that I do gets run through our CEO and managing director, and we run a lot of analysis on what it's going to cost us, and of course, we have a lot to think about in terms of tax credits and rebates. The UK having a 25% tax rebate, which is revenue-based. But in Canada, it's a labor-based credit, so that one we have to be a bit more careful with. So there's a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff going on as well.
So there's a real number crunching depending on...
There definitely can be, for sure.
So, and speaking of that, like, do you mind breaking down your typical day, or if you wish, your typical week?
I don't know if I could say I have a typical week, but I mean, generally I'm reading a lot of scripts, which I really enjoy. And, you know, depending on the phase of the project, how far along they are, you know, things like that, they may have concept art to give us to look at, you know, things like that. They may be casting, they may not be. I mean, everyone is going to be in very different stage. So sometimes I just get a script and that's the end of it, and I don't get anything else. Sometimes I get huge packets of material with concept art and breakdowns of the scenes and storyboards sometimes, which is even more detailed. So depending on what, you know, the project is and how organized they are and how early on and things like that, it can be looking at a lot of things. And then I spend a lot of my time in Excel. Usually they'll give us what we call a visual effects breakdown, which details, you know, in each shot of a film, which is usually about 5 seconds, what type of visual effects work would need to happen. And also things like what kind of assets do we need to build that are going to be used across all the shot work. So things like environments or creatures or, you know, props. So, and then I spend a lot of time sitting down with our supervisors and lead artists to talk about the type of work and what needs to go into it. Because I'm bidding down to the detail in how many days of work it's going to take across all the different types of work that they could be doing.
I was curious as to how much of the effects business did you personally know? Like, can you look at something and say, you know, 12-person days, or is this where you get their details and then you track down other people who give you estimates?
I mean, I do it initially as a first pass always. So, yeah, I'll go through and say, oh, I think that needs about 2 weeks' worth of animation time. Mm-hmm. But I always run everything through the supervisors and the people that are going to do the work, because they may think of something I might not think about. And the more I do that with them, the more I learn anyway. So
I imagine the longer you're doing that job, that makes such sense.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So you said you're reading a lot of scripts, you're going and you're, you know, putting in your initial estimates, a lot of back and forth with different parts of your company.
Mm-hmm, exactly. I tend to come in at 8 a.m. so that it gives me 2 hours of overlap with the London office, mm-hmm. Which is really, really helpful, because most of the senior people, and obviously that's our head office anyway, but that's where I can get a lot of feedback from them. And just timing-wise, it's kind of cool because I can have a little bit of overlap with them, get some feedback, and then I have the rest of the day to work on it, and then I'll send it back over at the end of my day, and then they can be looking at it their next day. So, like, that kind of time change seems sort of like it might be annoying, but it actually sometimes really works out as well. So,
gotcha.
It's kind of nice. Yeah.
Do you work on movies that are basically just to the UK and Canada, or do you do Hollywood films?
More often than not, it's coming out of L.A., It's okay. The big studios, you know, it's...
I was going to say, care to share names of a couple films where you've placed the bids and then gotten the work?
Well, I was involved with the latest Star Trek film. They were awarded that work before I started at DNEG because I was previously over at Sony. Okay. But I did help... So even when a film's in production, bidding still continues. You do have to do a lot of, okay, this sequence is now changed, and so we need a rebid. So that happens, you know, just as much as when you first do an initial bid. So I helped out with quite a bit of that on the latest Star Trek film.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Very nice. And the latest Star Trek films with these interviews will be living for a very long time on my blog. That would be the third of the reboot.
Yeah, that's right. Star Trek Beyond.
Star Trek Beyond.
Yes.
Awesome. Hey, just curious, like, how many bids are you submitting each month?
Oh, gosh, that's a good question.
Or each year. I mean, on average, you know. I mean, like, bids for, like, new work, not these kind of tweak this, tweak that.
Yeah, I mean, we're actively going after easily 20, 30, 40 shows on our kind of, we're paying attention to these and are interested in them in some way, shape, or form.
And I'm sure it varies by month, but
it does. It really does. Yeah. It does ebb and flow a little bit. Like, there's times where it's really busy and you definitely be doing multiple bids a week in terms of submitting them to clients, not just working on them, but submitting them. And then there's times where it may be every other week that you submit one. So sure. It kind of, yeah, it comes and goes a bit.
And just kind of curious, like, if you don't mind sharing, roughly what's the hit rate on these bids? Like, do you expect to get 2/3 of the bids you submit? Is it more like 5%? Is it?
That's interesting. So usually, if a show is really, really early on, you're going to be bidding from a script probably, and you're going to bid the entire film. Mm-hmm. It's very, very rare that one facility does an entire film. It's just not smart on the studio side. It's putting too much in one place, and it's just not very safe to do. All kinds of things can happen with your schedule, and you just may not be able to make it work. So, I mean, I think I heard something like, you know, the first Iron Man was split across 20 facilities or something. So,
okay,
you know, it does end up at, I mean, generally you have a couple, two or three of the bigger vendors and some smaller ones. There's a lot of smaller companies that specialize in certain things that they do really well. So, you know, you may end up doing a third of the film, you know, something like that. Well, so
I had no idea how much they divided the work. How do they make sure that, you know, the supervillain that you guys do looks the same as the supervillain that the other studio does? Do y'all then?
Well,
are
so
y'all obligated to share them?
A lot of times, if you're awarded a character like that, you're probably going to do the character throughout the whole film. But that doesn't necessarily mean that every single shot of that villain is yours. It could be that you do the initial, what we call an asset or a build of the original character, and then you sometimes have to share assets with other facilities. So it may be, you know, as an example, if you're gonna do, you know, Batman or something, that you may build a Batman that you're using in all of your stuff, but you may have to give the model of the Batman to another facility, and then they're gonna replicate what you've done from there.
Gotcha. So the contract, I'm sure, obligates you to share what you build with.
Yeah, because, I mean, what you do is owned by the studios, ultimately.
Oh, that makes sense. Work for hire, as they say.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Great. How long have you been there with Double Negative?
So I've been at DNEG for about a year now. And then before that, I was at Sony for about a year. And those are the two facilities I've been at in Vancouver. I came up to Vancouver for the Sony job. And then before that, I was at Lucasfilm.
Understood.
For a long time.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Okay, so in order to qualify for these mm-hmm. interviews, mm-hmm. You have to enjoy what you're doing.
Yes.
So it's fun hearing you talk about it. I could hear it in your voice, but could you articulate what is it about your job that you enjoy? Or your field, at least.
Okay, well, I mean, at some point we'll go back to how I got to where I am, which will probably help explain a lot of this. But I mean, sure. Generally in my day-to-day job, what I enjoy is working with the artists and just seeing how it goes from nothing to like the most amazing thing you've ever seen on the screen. I mean, there's, you know, as an example, there's a concept artist who sits in the same office as me, and he's working on an upcoming project that we've just been awarded. And in just like a couple days, the concept art that he showed me is just absolutely, it blows me away. I mean, to start from nothing and end up with what he ends up with is really pretty incredible. So I'm very lucky to get to work with people that are just that talented.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Okay. So yes, as you surmised, well, let's go back now to 2005.
Yeah.
Or if you need to go a little further, we can do that too.
Yeah.
Yeah, a long time ago.
So it seems like it's gone by very quickly, but
I know. I started Berkeley in 2005. So.
Oh, we just missed each other, probably.
Yeah, I started in the spring, but highly doubt I was teaching a single class.
Yeah.
I had no idea it would really be a long-term thing. But anyway,
yeah.
There you are, finishing up with your degree in music business.
Yep.
Guessing you weren't thinking visual effects?
Nope.
Okay, so let's do the full route from there to where you are now. Like, what was your headspace? What were you thinking as you were graduating? What was going on?
Well, I loved MP&E. I loved everything about it. And I thought for a while, probably in 2005, that I was going to be a recording engineer. But I didn't really know, like, what area that would be in. So I did 3 internships.
Area meaning like what genre music or
Or like, you know, where would I do this? Like, would it actually be music? Would it be film? Would it be, you know, a mastering job? Like, I didn't really know where.
Okay.
So I applied for 3 internships and I got all 3. So I just did all 3.
Wow.
So I was at Mix One, which was amazing.
I'm sorry, is that in Boston or L.A.?
So all 3 of these were in Boston. They're all local because I decided I was going to stay around Boston for a little while and kind of, you know, see, like, get a little experience before I decided to go anywhere else.
Sure.
So Mix One is a recording studio, post-production facility. It's over near Fenway. At least it was back then. I think it still is.
Okay.
And so, you know, I was an intern, you know, a lot of coffee and rubbish and all that kind of stuff. But one of the cool things I got to do at that job was help out with sound design for an independent film. And I learned a ton doing that, which was really exciting. I did that job 2 days a week. Then I was an intern at a mastering studio called M-Works, which I think I only did 1 day a week. And then the third internship was Blue Jay Recording Studio, which back then was co-owned by one of the Backstreet Boys and a guy named Marcus. And I was an intern there, and I actually did this one for the longest. So I did that job for 2 days a week. And, you know, as an intern, originally started off just running and, you know, rubbish and coffee and going out to get dinners for clients and things like that. And then I got moved up to apprentice, and I got to spend more time in the recording studio, and that was strictly music at that place.
Got it. By the way, were these paid or unpaid internships?
All 3 were unpaid.
Understood.
And I worked at the Boston Symphony while I was doing this.
Like the ticketing office? Or?
I was an usher, yeah.
Okay.
Which was amazing. It was like free music, but getting paid.
Right.
I loved it. The Blue Jay one I really loved, and I learned a ton, but I think I kind of figured out doing that the music route probably wasn't going to be for me. Just sort of the lifestyle of being a recording engineer for albums is like kind of nonstop, and, you know.
I've heard other people say, like, you're at the beck and call of the artist, and they call you up at 2 a.m. like, I'm feeling creative.
Yes, yeah, exactly. I mean, this was a really long time ago now, but one of the artists back when I was an intern, or actually when I was an apprentice, was Lauryn Hill.
Okay.
And I remember that I didn't leave the studio for at least 24 hours one day, and I was just like, I don't think I could do this in the long run. Like, it's okay when I'm 20-something and, you know, excited and whatever, but I don't know that I could do it for forever. So, you know, I just, that was kind of the one where I think I realized that that wasn't the right route. But I was really interested in the film stuff that I was able to do at Mix One, which was really great. So after I did those, which were all kind of taking place over the summer, and then I stayed at Blue Jay on for a while longer, a position came up at a company in Boston called Soundtrack, which generally does sound for radio and TV commercials, a little bit of music, and occasionally some very minimal film work. And there, the job there was receptionist, and I just thought, oh, I'll get my foot in the door, that's great. So I got the job, so it was amazing.
Do you recall how you found out about the job or how you applied?
I don't think anyone told me about it. I think I just was, had, you know, I was always looking online, like, you know, what's out there and things like that.
Craigslist or Monster.
Yeah, things like that. But I think actually this one was just me submitting my resume to the information, you know, email address on the website. Because I don't think it was publicized that it was a job opening. But I just sent it and said, you know, if you have anything, please think of me.
So you were looking around various studios and places around and just sending your resume.
Yeah, I was. Cool. And then they actually called and offered me the reception job. And, of course, I happily took it. And when I took that job was when I stopped working at Mix One and M-Works, and where I just did Blue Jay. And I also stopped working at Boston Symphony because this was a 40-hour-a-week, you know, regular hour job.
Sure.
So about 3 months after being there as a receptionist, their accountant had gone off on maternity leave and had said she wasn't going to come back, so they asked if I wanted to do that job.
To do accounting now.
Yeah, so I was like, I will absolutely do anything that I can do that I can learn more from. So yeah, absolutely. So I did that. And I ended up being at Soundtrack for probably 2.5 or so years, maybe. Yeah, about that.
As the accountant?
No, so I was doing the accounting stuff, and then I got into talent payment, which is like AFTRA and SAG talent payment. And then
SAG?
Yeah, like basically paying the talent in the TV and the radio commercials.
Got it.
Yeah, so... And then I also learned client services stuff while I was there. I did some company scheduling. I was able to do some bidding. That was my very first time where I got into a little bit of bidding. And it wasn't even so much bidding as just sort of estimating what the cost of the session would be. But it was sort of, you know, my first experience in bidding. So I kind of did a little bit of everything there, which I was just lucky because it was a small place and they were – eager to have somebody that wanted to learn and do more.
Well,
so
you say you did everything. You weren't doing the studio type work, but you were doing lots of stuff on the business side.
Exactly. Yeah. And you know, every once in a while, the kind of cool thing about that place is, you know, they'd need a random person to do a little bit of, you know, a voiceover or something, and you get pulled in and do that here and there, and you do some. Did a little bit of casting, of calling in all the talent and, you know, helping organize that stuff. It was just a lot of different things to get exposure to all in one place, which was amazing.
Sure. And can I ask, like, was that okay, or did you spend your years sort of chomping at the bit hoping that a studio position would open up?
No, I really think that I kind of felt like, oh, okay, this business side fits me more.
Okay.
And so I just wanted to get my, you know, hands on anything, like anything I could do that would be learning something new or, you know, things like that. So,
sure.
You know, when I first went to Berkeley, my intention was just to do music business. I never wanted to be a performer, you know, anything like that. So I get terrified, quite honestly, performing. I love playing for myself, but I always just wanted to do business. So that was, you know, it kind of always sort of fit. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I obviously had an interest in sound and music, of course, and learning, you know, production engineering side gave me an edge, I think, to being able to speak to clients about what they needed because I could speak the right language.
Right.
Which I think was really huge, actually. And when I got a call from Skywalker Sound while I was working at Soundtrack, which, by the way, I thought was a prank because I thought there's no way they're calling me. when they actually did call me and I went and interviewed, you know, that was the thing they told me later, that that is the reason I stood out, is that I definitely could speak the correct language and was going to be able to speak with the clients about, you know, what they needed and things like that.
So that was the next step, was you got a job at Skywalker Sound?
I did. So they called me, and of course I was living in Boston.
Was this you submitted an application going, hey, shot in the dark?
Yeah, yep. Mm-hmm. My family was living in Northern California, and I thought that that was the next place I wanted to move to. And,
this,
you know,
is like 2008 or something.
Yeah, it was 2008. I'd been in Boston since 2002. Mm-hmm. And I was kind of just ready for a change. So, I sent something to them and they actually called me. So, and they said, well, and yes, I told them.
Can I ask quickly, were you planning on, like, were you definitely moving and hoping to get a job, or were you sort of casting out lines hoping?
Yeah, I was hoping. Yeah, I had nothing planned, but I was hoping that something would come up.
Gotcha. All right, sorry, please continue with this.
When they called me, you know, I said, well, I'm in Boston at the moment, but, you know, I'd like to be moving to San Francisco. And they sort of said, well, if you move, let us know. So I thought, well, what the heck? Okay, I guess I'll move. So I did. My mom flew out and drove across the country with me. And then I arrived on a Thursday night, and my parents were living there. So luckily I stayed with them for a couple months. But when I got there, I called them Friday morning and I said, I'm in San Francisco now. And they said, great. Do you want to come in and interview? And I said, yeah, absolutely. I would love to. And they said, how about Monday? So I said, sure, Monday. That's great. I'll be there. And they called me on Tuesday and said that I'd had the job, and I started on Thursday.
And what was the job specifically?
So the job was, the title was production accountant. So basically, so Skywalker Sound does sound for film, all aspects of film. So music, sound effects, Foley, dialogue, mixing, you know, all of it. So the job was, I was going to be doing the union payroll. All of the sound artists are union, which is slightly unusual in film nowadays, but that one area is still union, which has a very specific payroll, you know, a lot of rules and things like that. So I did that, and also was doing, you know, sort of cost accounting for what they were spending on the shows, whatever shows were assigned to me. It was a small team of four people at the time that did finance work. So it was a little bit of everything, but that was where I started off. And of course I was thrilled. working on George Lucas's ranch is not bad.
Yeah. Wow.
So, you know, I started off and I kind of,
like,
you know,
how many people were there?
Well, Skywalker Sound is about 150.
Okay.
It kind of comes and goes a bit because the editors, the sound editors, are freelance, so they work when there's work.
Mm-hmm.
But generally, at the time, about 150 was the top that it would be.
Gotcha.
And we were working on about, believe it or not, 150 projects a year, all various sizes, from small, you know, $1,000 things to a couple million. So it was,
wow,
a wide range of different things, including music, including some commercials and film. So, you know, I was immediately just wanted to get my hands on everything, because as you can probably tell by now, that's what I'm like. and, you know, I had a wonderful boss back then who I think realized that that's what I was like. And, you know, I worked for him the whole time I was there, and he's the reason I moved up the way I moved up. So in the 6.5 years that I was there, I went from an accountant to bidding and scheduling. So I got to do a lot.
And bidding is essentially what you're doing now.
So yes.
What you're doing now, you were doing then.
I was, yeah. And of course, it's a bit different in the sound world, because sound is tiny, tiny in terms of dollars compared to visual effects. But the idea is obviously the same. And, you know, he taught me that from the very beginning, because that was what he did in his job. And, you know, ultimately handed it off to me. So that was kind of how it happened. And so I ended up there doing both the bidding and the scheduling. So scheduling of all of the artists and the rooms and the facilities and the screening rooms and the, you know, mixing rooms and everything, as well as doing all the bids for all of the facility as well, which was a lot to do.
Right.
But I like being there.
And you said you were there for 6 years?
It's about six and a half, yeah.
Okay. By the way, I noticed that I think you got an MBA during that time. Is that correct?
I did. That's true.
So
I started doing MBA back in Boston. I started doing it. Because then, I don't know if this is true now, but
Suffolk University. Hold on, I'm sorry, you cut out for just a sec.
Is this better?
Still a little fuzzy.
No.
I can hear you. I can hear you. Okay, now.
Is that okay? Yeah, that's better. Well, I wonder what happened.
Yeah, weird.
It is weird. It got tired. What was I saying? I forget.
I asked about your MBA, and you said you had started at Suffolk when you were in Boston.
Yeah. So back then, Suffolk and Berkeley had an agreement where some credits would transfer.
Yes, and they still do, by the way.
They still do. Okay, so that was the program that I was in. And I did evening classes while I was working full-time at Soundtrack in Boston. But then when I got the job at Skywalker, I spoke to them about finishing it from, you know, remotely, which they were very, very happy for me to do. So I completed it in 2010.
Was this like an online education program? I mean,
It wasn't, but it was for the last two credits that I did. The last two classes that I had to finish, which I just did from while I was over in California.
So it sounds like you were mostly done with your MBA.
Yeah, I was pretty close to being finished, yeah. And I took a semester off when I moved just to settle myself.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just did the last little bit.
Got it. So,
yeah.
And can I ask why you decided to get that MBA?
Honestly, I thought it would make me more competitive just in the job market in general. It's relatively unusual in film for people to have MBAs. And so I just thought anything to do that, you know, can stand out and it'll just give me an edge. And I have to say, I really have found it very, very valuable because, you know, I've had a couple, like, you know, every once in a while there's something that goes on at work and you're kind of like, I don't necessarily think I agree with that or, you know, something. But if you have that education to have done all those case studies and things like that, to be able to then go to your boss and have a discussion about why something doesn't work and what you would suggest and things like that, just sort of how to handle yourself in a business environment, I just think it's been really valuable for me.
Sure. And, you know, who knows, you got a couple promotions, and I guess you'll never know if you'd have gotten them without the MBA.
Yeah. I mean, I feel more confident at work having done a lot of the, you know, classes that I did and things like that. I really think it was a very, very valuable thing to do, and I'm glad I did it for sure.
Sure. Okay, so anyway, you're at Skywalker Sound for over 6 years, which is a good run.
Yep.
You're not there anymore.
Nope.
What happened there?
I was contacted by Sony, a division of Sony, their visual effects and animation division, which is called ImageWorks.
Okay.
And I was contacted by them to ask if I was interested to join ImageWorks in Vancouver because they were opening a new facility up here, as many, many visual effects companies have done since the tax credits have come into play and are so integral in Hollywood.
And you genuinely were contacted. This wasn't like you sent them your resume and then they contacted you.
Right. That's right.
They call it headhunters, right? People who go out and try to find people.
Yeah. I mean, the recruiter that's at ImageWorks, I knew from my time at Lucasfilm. So they do move around and you start to know these people, you know, mm-hmm. in general. So, and then they offered me a senior production accountant position. in the visual effects division, which is actually really fascinating. So, you know, you say accounting and you think that sounds really lame and boring, mm-hmm. but in film, production accounting is fascinating. It's so interesting. It's not necessarily sitting crunching numbers and things like that. While I was at Sony, I was on Alice in Wonderland 2, and I was in charge of managing the budget basically from the bid that had been awarded to while the show is in production until it's finished. And that film was in production for maybe in visual effects only at least 2 years.
Wow.
And so basically what I did was I would run cost reports of how the show was doing on a weekly basis. So what that meant was, you know, we had a person who ran payroll, and then we would get all of our reports for all of our cost for the previous week. And we would run, you know, through a lot of different steps to get to this, but we would run a big master Excel document that would say, here's how you're doing your cost to date, how much you spent for the week, how much you're projected to spend for the entire project, and just generally how are you doing in all the different departments. And it was broken down by line to every individual person on the film, which on Alice was easily 400 or 500 people.
Wow. And by the way, do you mind sharing, like, if you wish, as a percentage, like how big a pay bump did you get going over to Sony? So it definitely sounds like a position with more responsibility.
I would say probably like 20% more, maybe.
Which is real.
It sounds about right. I don't know exactly what the number is, but, you know, they obviously paid for me relocation and signing bonus and, you know, all this sort of stuff. So it was a package.
Uh-huh. Nice. Oh, signing bonus. That, wow.
Yep. I think they've been looking for someone for a while unsuccessfully, so they were pretty excited when I said yes. So, you know, yeah. So, and aside from doing the weekly cost report, there's all kinds of other analysis to do on, you know, projected, how many shots are we going to finish this week? How many do we have left to do in the film? Just all kinds of ad hoc sort of stuff that you can do. And it's working very, very closely with the producer on the project, kind of being their right hand, making sure that, you know, they don't have to worry about this stuff. And, you know, it's really a fascinating thing that I think most people don't even know is a job that exists,
oh,
to be honest.
Yeah, very cool.
But while I was at Sony, one of the other things that I did aside from that was assisting them doing their bids. So a lot of what I did would be margin analysis on the show.
Margin meaning like how much profit you'd be making.
Exactly. Yep. As well as, you know, rebate analysis is up here. We have the tax credit that's based on, you know, the labor that's done on the shows. Mm-hmm. You know, lots of analysis like that that I would do as part of behind the scenes information that would go to senior management and for them to decide whether or not they'd be happy submitting this to the client. So, you know, that got me in on bidding for visual effects. Because they knew that I had all this experience doing bidding previously and that I had an interest in doing it in visual effects as well. And so, you know, I got to be able to be a part of that. And the other thing about that.
Well, hold on. You cut out for a sec?
You know, I. Yep. Is okay. That better?
Okay. Yeah. Now it's better. Sorry about that, but I heard that you got experience bidding. Sorry about the.
No, that's okay.
I heard you had a bunch of experience bidding, and they knew that you wanted to get into visual effects bidding, and then you cut out.
Yeah. So the cool thing about being able to be involved with that was, you know, A, I was getting a lot of exposure to it, and visual effects bidding is so detailed, you know, compared to sound and things like that, that I was also the keeper of the bid files so I could help sort of build a lot of my own bid files and how I wanted to do things. And so I just got a lot of ownership of that piece of it,
uh-huh.
which, you know, I enjoyed as well. And then, you know, an opportunity came up to go to Double Negative, which, you know, as far as I'm concerned, is one of the best visual effects companies in the world. If you just look at the work that's been done and, you know, got another Oscar last year, so that's not bad.
So did they reach out to you again, or did you just sort of hear about this opportunity?
I heard about this opportunity, and I had, again, it's like a recruiter that I had kind of known a little bit as well, so I just emailed her directly and said, you know, I was interested in this position, and so I interviewed and, you know, I was offered it, and so now I've been at DNEG for a year, and I just solely do bidding. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I do a little bit of working with finance and just telling them a lot of my knowledge about what I've done previously, because this office in Vancouver is new. It's only been here for about a year and a half, maybe 2 years. It started up about the same time as Sony, actually. But, you know, so I do help out a little bit with a finance team as well.
Very nice. And yeah. Here you are.
And here I am now.
All right. Let's move on to the third of three part of the interview.
Mm-hmm.
So first question I have for you is, what, if any, is your current relationship with music?
So jazz, so let me go back a bit. So my very first instrument of all is piano. I've played ever since I was tiny. My dad plays, my grandfather played, you know, so... I don't play the vibraphone anymore, but I have a piano in my house and I play piano quite regularly. But I don't play other than that, although I spend a lot of time going to the symphony, and I'm lucky because it's across the street from my apartment.
Nice.
And so, you know, really it's something I enjoy. It's almost a stress reliever, honestly, for me.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Okay. Next question. So think about your current job,
mm-hmm.
and think back to your Berklee education. And is there anything that you feel Berklee did particularly well to prepare you for what you're doing now? Well, you say, you know, I'm glad I went to Berklee as opposed to some other college.
Oh, I'm definitely glad I went to Berklee. So that's a really hard question. I loved everything about Berklee. I loved that I was immersed in this like culture, people that were like me, that were interested in things that I was interested in, that they let you explore different things that could interest you. Like, you know, I was able to do production engineering. I was able to do business, you know, and all of my friends were doing all these different things. And so you were able to learn a lot from all the other people and what they were doing. And, you know, like I said to you, I'm always interested in learning something new, trying to, you know, see what other opportunities there are to learn more and be better and things like that. And so I feel like, you know, there might not be a specific class that's something that I could say helped me for my job, but just the overall experience of it, just feeling like it was people that are like me and are interested in things like me, that I mean, was, I don't think that exists anywhere else.
It was very validating, you mean? So.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, very nice. I'd like to turn that question around now,
mm-hmm.
where obviously you went to Berklee knowing it gave that Bachelor of Music degree.
Yep.
But thinking back to your education, is there anything where you look back and you say, you know, would have been really useful to have learned this, and Berklee could have taught it to me, and they didn't?
Hmm.
Anything you wish Berklee had done or done better?
I mean, in MP&E, I would have liked to have been like another film sound class, and I know film scoring was a different thing that was going on, but mm-hmm. even if back then, if there could have been a class where the two were collaborating, or just something that was a bit more film, because music's quite narrow really, and film is pretty massive if you think about all the different aspects of film that you could be in. And I remember doing one class where we were given a sequence from Matrix, mm-hmm. and we had to hire a composer, and we had to hire voiceover talent and sound effects people, and that was the thing that I can say is the most relatable to what I've ended up doing, mm-hmm. and I would have loved to have been that there was more of that, because, you know, and I was lucky also in my internship that I was able to do a bit of that as well, but that would have been more beneficial for me, just where I've ended up, but, you know, I ended up here anyway, so. Yeah.
Fair enough. Well, it sounds like you got on, you know, got on your current path pretty quickly. I mean, you were going in a bunch of different directions initially, you know, within the company, but it sort of, you ended up, you know, focusing in on one, and as opportunities came, you moved forward on those.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's definitely led, like, one to the next, to the next, to the next.
Yeah.
So really, we could even say you were on that path going right back to a few months after you graduated.
Yeah, I mean, I think I've always just been open to what might come up, because you never know where that's going to lead you.
Well, you may just partially answered the question I was about to ask, which is, because there are other Berklee graduates, perhaps more recent than you, who haven't yet found that path,
mm-hmm.
and other people maybe in their last year looking out the big scary world.
Yeah.
And so it sounded like being open to opportunity is one thing you definitely tell people to do, worked for you.
Absolutely.
Is there anything
yeah.
else you'd, any other advice you'd have?
Well, I mean, I don't think that I've ever had the mindset of, oh my gosh, it's scary out there. There's all these different things. And, you know, I've just gone, okay, here's what works where I am. You know, at the time, Soundtrack, it was a reception job, but, you know, it got my foot in the door somewhere. And, you know, look to all the places that it led. So I think it's even just don't try and think so big right away. Just get, you know, it's almost like put your nose down and get on with it. Kind of like just keep going, because it's going to lead to other things. And if you work really hard, people notice things like that. They always have with me. It sounds like a really cliche thing, like, you know, work hard and people will notice. But I do believe it's true. And, you know, in my career, it's absolutely true. I've always made an extra effort and asked for more and told people I was interested in learning more things. And, you know, they will give things to you if you express that to people. So I think people have to remember those kind of things that sound a bit cheesy, but they're really true.
Okay, that's great. And let's sort of focus the question in just a little bit more, because it sounds like let's say you're working on the business end of film.
Mm-hmm.
And your interview is going to go in this big index. I don't know if you looked at that index, but all the interviews are indexed by the career.
Yeah, yeah.
So the people who are going to be listening to your interview are going to be saying, you know, film bidding manager. What's your exact title again?
Yeah, bidding manager. That's right.
Bidding manager in film. Mm-hmm. Hey, that looks interesting. I wonder what that's like. Maybe I'd be interested in that. Those are the people mm-hmm. who are going to be hearing this. So for people sure. who want to get into either bidding or just generally the business end of film,
mm-hmm.
Do you have any particular suggestions as to how to break into that?
Well, I mean, up here in Vancouver in visual effects, you know, there is a massive amount of opportunity. So I think the first thing you have to do is look at where you're interested in being and where there are a lot of different opportunities. And, you know, for where I am, animation, visual effects, it's growing still. It's, you know, it's really, it's a new-ish industry to this area, but it's growing very quickly. So there's a lot of different facilities and a lot of different opportunities. And if you're first coming out of school and you're thinking this is might be what I want to do, then you want to look for jobs that are production runner type positions, production assistant type jobs. Those are the business side of visual effects or animation. Mm-hmm. You could be looking, though, because film is broken down into sort of pieces. So pre-production, production, and post-production, and even before that, development. But, you know, production meaning the filming on set. You'll see a lot of jobs with the same titles, runners and assistants. Now, you could be working on a film set, you know, helping, you know, with running the cables for the lights. I mean, it could be anything. But I think those are the kinds of things to look for if that's what you're interested in. And then I think you just have to be, if there's something that you're interested in doing and you see it and you're a runner in a facility and you see, oh, there's an artist and they're working on such and such, maybe I could do that, you know, tell people. Because a lot of times people are really excited to tell you what they know. And, you know, they'll be more than willing to help you. And, you know, the recruiters and the HR people and all that kind of stuff. If you tell them that you want to learn something new, they'll do what they can to help you.
Oh, that's great to hear.
Yeah.
I just have one last question for you.
Sure.
Which is, you have the mic, as they say, when you're being recorded. So is there anything we missed? Anything else you'd like to say?
Wow. I mean, you know, I'm very happy to talk to new graduates or people that are interested if anybody wants to ask me anything. You know, obviously I've been in a few different cities and I do know quite a lot of people. So if I can help direct somebody, I'm more than happy to. Or if they want advice about something, I you know, love chatting about this because I feel like Berkeley was really great for me. I loved it all, so I would really like to help, you know, other Berkeley graduates, and I've done some alumni event stuff in the past. So if, you know, if anybody wants to ask me anything, they're more than welcome to.
Well, that's great. How should people reach out to you?
I think the easiest thing is probably through my LinkedIn page.
Okay, I link to those typically for the interviews. So
that's great. I've got a lot of connections on LinkedIn, and if I can connect somebody to somebody or introduce, you know, do things like that. So, yeah, that's probably the easiest way to find me.
Perfect. Well, hey, speaking of LinkedIn, look for a message from me in the immediate future.
Awesome.
And hey, I really enjoyed this conversation. Sounds like I never really thought about jobs like yours.
Yeah, I know. Well, I mean, like I said, I didn't think about it in the beginning, but, you know, one step takes you to another step to another. So here's where I am. So it's pretty cool.
I'm curious. So are you a Canadian citizen?
No, but I'm a permanent resident now, as of about a year ago.
Okay, cool. Congratulations.
Yeah.
I have dual citizenship, but never lived in Canada.
Oh, really? Okay, that's
cool.
Yeah,
my mother was Canadian, so.
Oh, I really, really love living up here. It's amazing.
Vancouver's a beautiful city.
Yeah, it's absolutely stunning.
Great. Well, again, hey, had a great time this evening. Thank you so much for making the time to do this.
Absolutely.
Best of luck with everything.
Thank you very much.
Right. Have a great evening.
You too.